from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up this morning on Forum in our opening hour, we begin with analysis and reaction to President Barack Obama's proposed budget for fiscal year 2014, which is already angering not only Republican leaders with its calls for fewer tax hikes, but Democratic liberals as well, who feel it goes too far in diminishing Medicare and Social Security. Then at 9:30, we'll talk to award-winning documentary filmmaker Ali Lambert, the first Westerner to film both the regime and rebel sides in the ongoing brutal civil war in Syria. Forum is next. Join us here after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. This week, President Obama is set to release his 2014 budget, proposing sweeping cuts to Social Security and Medicare and fewer tax hikes. The new budget will reportedly include parts of the compromise offer that Obama made to House Speaker John Boehner back in December. And in this opening Forum half hour, we talk about what is in the proposed budget, which is already getting a negative reception from congressional Republicans as well as from some liberals. I also want to discuss how the budget relates to the across-the-board cuts known as the sequester. And joining us from Washington is Michael Scheer, who is White House correspondent of the New York Times, and good to have you with us. Good morning.
Happy to be here.
We also have Kevin Hall with us, and Kevin Hall is chief economics correspondent with the McClatchy Newspapers. He joins us this morning as well. Welcome, Kevin Hall.
Thanks.
Glad to have you both aboard. And Michael Scheer, if I can begin with you, this, as I tried to intimate, is not necessarily going to make either side happy. I mean, cutting entitlements, certainly as far as liberal Democrats are concerned, is unacceptable, and tax increases unacceptable on the other side. Let's talk about just what's going to be in the proposal itself, if we can, with you first off. Cuts in Social Security and other benefit programs, including Medicare, and a higher premium in terms of copayments for the wealthier.
Right. I mean, essentially, this goes back to an effort that the president had made, at the various points that he and the Congress came to clash over the debt ceiling, over the effort to cut the deficit over the last couple of years. And at one of those moments, the president put on the table an idea that would change the rate of, the way growth is measured, inflation is measured as it relates to the Social Security program and others, that would, in essence, save the government a lot of money and by essentially, slowing the amount of increase of the benefits that are paid out. And that is something that Republicans at times have embraced, that liberals have decried, and will... and he hopes had hoped at the time would bring Republicans along in some sort of compromise, because Republicans have said for some time that they are not going to even entertain any of the revenue enhancements that the president wants until they see that he's quote unquote serious on changes to entitlement programs. The problem is that now that he's embedded this in his budget that he'll release on Wednesday, it's not at all clear that the Republicans are going to come forth with a reciprocal agreement to raise revenues. In fact, if anything, there was a near universal reaction from the right that said, "Look, this is not we're not going to do revenues," and so that's where the stalemate remains.
And yet, Kevin Hall, there's entitlement reform built into this. It sounds very much like the rhetoric we were hearing from people like Eric Cantor. I mean, can the president actually move past these fiscal fights and actually woo the GOP? He's talking about a charm offensive and all this kind of compromise.
I'd be real surprised. I mean, I think the fact that it comes after a House and Senate plan that are already out there and positions itself somewhere between the two, but they're not really entitlement reforms in the way that Republicans speak about them, and certainly not the way Paul Ryan thinks about them. The biggest change is simply changing the cost of living adjustment to the beneficiaries and Social Security beneficiaries mostly, and that's a fairly one of the great ironies of all of that debate, which Republicans have wanted Democrats to cry. If we remember that benefits the COLA, the cost of living adjustment, comes on existing workers who are paying for retired beneficiaries. They're looking at a more conservative way of calculating that cost of living adjustment. The cost of living adjustment currently is a complete aberration. It was just the only thing available at the time. That's why they went to what we call the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. The Federal Reserve uses something called the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, which takes into account changes in Medicare and changes in healthcare spending more broadly, which is what actual beneficiaries pay in their real lives. Yet we're not talking about that. We're talking about just a different way of measuring something that doesn't get at what beneficiaries today use.
But we're also talking, Michael Shear, about the president cutting $1.8 trillion from the federal deficit over the course of 10 years. But a lot of this is goes against what the president and Vice President Biden have promised. A lot of this is really on the backs of veterans, the poor, and older Americans.
Well, that's definitely the problem that the administration faces on the left. You know, as much as they face skepticism and opposition and outright hostility to their proposals from Republicans, you know, trying to push through these kinds of changes to the entitlement programs and further cuts is something that's giving his staunchest supporters a lot of heartburn. And you know, there's a lot of liberals out there, a lot of folks in the progressive and Democratic communities who say, look, you know, the president's already given up a lot. There's been an awful lot of spending cuts if you, you know, if you add up over the various rounds of back and forth that have taken place. There's, you know, trillions of dollars worth of spending cuts, depending on how you calculate it, 1.8 or 2.4 or 2.6. And the and so the left is going to say, you know, this is, you know, after winning re-election pretty convincingly, is this really necessary for the president to, you know, to sort of offer these concessions? And from the left's perspective, the answer is pretty clearly no.
And from the right's perspective, we're hearing, well, I don't even know if you call it Congressman Boehner the right, but that entitlements are being held hostage for more tax hikes.
Right. I mean, you know, the reaction, the Speaker Boehner put out a press release, you know, moments after the reports in our paper a few days ago that the president was going to make these, embed these proposals again in his budget. The Speaker came out and said, you know, from his way of thinking, if some of these entitlement changes are good, and I agree with Kevin, they're modest at best. I mean, in the opinion of Republicans, but you know, Speaker Boehner's suggestion was: look, if these are good things that the president thinks should be done, let's do them, and not have the requirement that we have to raise taxes. That's the Speaker's bugaboo on that.
It's Kevin Hall, go ahead. I think you're.
Yeah, I think the fact that this budget comes out after two more have come, and this really, the way Washington has worked in the last 4 years has been about the continuing resolution, which funds government through a non-budget process, effectively, or non-appropriations process. We've got the debt ceiling looming sometime around late July, August, when we hit that ceiling again. And so
you've also, got a congressional agreement to have an agreement by the end of September.
Yeah, on both of those. So that really is kind of the mirror through which this budget proposal should probably be viewed. You know, does this give us some room, some ground to do a couple small things? I mean, I think my gut is that this is all about playing small ball and that we're not going to look at anything large.
It's also possibly, Kevin, wouldn't you say a mistake for the administration to begin a negotiation kind of at an end point versus a starting point?
Yes, for sure.
And let's talk again about the specifics in this. You got Rob Portman, for example, saying that this is a real opportunity between now and the summer, that there's a possibility of actually moving something forward. But with the sequester and with the fact that this doesn't look a lot different from the former offer, just realistically or pragmatically, how can this thing move through?
Is that directed to me?
Well, either one of you. I mean, just
go ahead, Kevin.
I think the sequester is a perfect foil because it allows you to do some of the hard work, blaming your opponent and never having to take ownership of the bad thing that's happened. So I think they kind of both like the sequester and you know, are trying to figure out what they can get done and still leave the sequester in place and blame each other for it.
Well, let me also go into some of the details of what the president's putting forward here, just in terms of whether this has a likelihood of moving through Congress, through both houses of Congress. Michael Shear, there's calls for tax on tobacco, for example, for preschool revenue, and $50 in spending on public works projects. How do you think that'll fly?
Well, not well at all. I mean, the president's proposal on preschool, which he made in the State of the Union address this year, would be a pretty dramatic expansion of availability of public preschool across the country. It would be done through largely grants to states, not directly by an expansion of the Head Start program. But Republicans were very resistant to that. And I think the idea of a major new increase in the tobacco tax to pay for it isn't going to help. And I think the investment, the infrastructure investment, is something that the president has been pushing for several years now. And I don't see a whole lot of support certainly in the House and not even in the Senate for what some deride as another stimulus package.
Kevin Hall, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to this, maybe my colleague knows, but the infrastructure initiative I don't think is funded through a gas tax. You have the U.S. a unique position with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is no flaming liberal organization, saying put a new gas tax in place. We haven't raised the federal gas tax in decades. Put it in place and fund it with a direct funding mechanism for infrastructure, and it's a win-win. You get jobs, you get infrastructure, but neither party seems to embrace that idea. Do you know?
Well, I'm not 100% sure. I will say this, that having covered state politics for years, many of the transportation folks on the state level are trying to move away from the gas tax because it's essentially a rapidly declining source of revenue, right? The more efficient cars get at burning fuel, the less fuel they need, and the lower the gas tax, the less money the gas tax produces. And so you've seen a state like Virginia recently eliminate its gas tax and change to a mix of, I think actually they lowered their gas tax and then increased their sales tax and other taxes to compensate. So it'd be interesting to see how that would play out on the federal level.
And by the way, Michael Shear is White House correspondent of the New York Times. If you've just joined us, we're talking about President Obama's 2014 budget proposal, and you can certainly join us if you have questions to ask or if you have comments and you want to bring your voice into the conversation. Now is the time to do so, because this is a half-hour segment, and we'd like to hear from you. You can join us at our toll-free number, whether you're listening on Sirius or Internet or just plain radio. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Again, toll-free for your calls, 866-733-6786, or email us, our email address, forum@kqed.org, or go to our Facebook page, or go to your Twitter handle, which here is @KQEDForum. You can tweet us at that, and you can also go to our website and email us. A number of ways to communicate with us, and we would like to hear from you. I'm also wondering if I can ask you, Kevin Hall, just about the controversy over the chain CPI. It's a Social Security cut which saves money by switching the government to a slower measure of inflation. Why are liberals so upset about this?
Well, I think because it's viewed as a tax on beneficiaries. They will get less back in their cost of living adjustment every year on their Social Security benefit, and that is true. And the thing about Social Security is, if you were really intent on fixing Social Security, there are so many easy ways to do it. It really is the easiest problem to solve, whether it's raising the retirement age, linking the retirement age to longevity, different incentives for when you take the benefit. So I think that's where I think they feel mostly this is on the backs of current seniors. And for the administration, I do think it puts Democrats in a bit of a dangerous position.
And how do you think they're responding to this loophole for getting unemployment and disability benefits at the same time, getting rid of that?
That's a tougher one. I'll defer to my colleague and see if he thinks it has a better chance. That's one that's a little newer on the stage, and I don't know enough to know whether that's how far that will move.
What's your read, Michael Shear?
You know, I plead a little bit of ignorance too. I mean, not having spent as much time up on the Hill, that's one that on the surface of it sounds like something that should have some appeal, because it's essentially closing a loophole and on the surface of it anyway, for common sense would say that if you are on disability and already drawing federal disability benefits, that somehow you shouldn't also qualify for a sort of a double dip scenario. But whether there's complicated, I'm sure there are complicated both policy and political implications behind all of that. That beyond the just the opposition to cutting a benefit, whether how that plays out, I'm not sure.
I don't think it's the limits on tax preferred retirement accounts for wealthy taxpayers and the limits on wealthy tax deductions are going to play well with the Republicans either, just to mention something else that's in the president's package. And there's lots going on in Washington now that we obviously don't have time to talk about. There's a stampede to take cuts in salary that began with President Obama of 5%. There are scientists who are demonstrating against cuts out today in Washington in fairly strong numbers about NIH cuts and other cuts in medical research and scientific research. And let's go to your calls and let's bring you into this discussion. And we begin, Graham, with you. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I was just going to say the Social Security means testing is an issue I think needs to be addressed and can be addressed quickly. Anecdotally, I know some folks who live in Florida. They go to a poker game every week with a bunch of retirees, and apparently these retirees joke about using their Social Security check or their poker money. So you think about, you know, people spending, you know, I don't know, $400 or $500 gambling it. And that's, our money, right? And it's disrespectful. They don't need it. They joke about it. I think that's something that could easily be fixed.
Social Security money uses poker money. Kevin Hall?
Yes, I can tackle this one. I think there's a bigger question here, and while I understand how it's distasteful that someone who doesn't need it gets it, the way the system was set up with progressivity and the scaled, you know, different income groups pay different amounts, at the end of the day, the reason they had a buy-in politically to this is that everybody paid in, everybody came out. If you get rid of that, then you have a very different kind of program. It's a welfare-type program, and I think there would be less political buy-in with the electorate. So I think there's a danger in taking means testing too far. I think when you look at the history of the Social Security program, everybody paid in, everybody paid out. The place I think people should be looking at is raising these caps. You can make a lot more money. There was no cap initially when this program, all your income was subject to Social Security withdrawals or caps on how much they took out for Social Security, and you got that back, you know, at a scaled rate at the end. And that's where nobody seems to be looking, and that's where you put it on a right foot.
Well, let me thank Graham for his call and remind you that Kevin G. Hall is national economics correspondent with McClatchy Newspapers. And here's a question from a listener, Robert, who writes, chain consumer price index in plain English means cut. There is one fair way to address future shortfalls in Social Security, and that is by addressing the cap on wealthy Americans not paying Social Security taxes, as Bernie Sanders and co-sponsors propose in Senate Bill 500. The president supported such a plan previously. Why is this solution now ignored by him? Michael Scheer?
Well, I think, as Kevin said, that is where, you know, an awful lot of people think that it would make a lot of sense and it could solve the problem. But politically, that's a non-starter for a very powerful constituency, which is the wealthy. And so, the Republicans are not likely to sign on to it. And so what the president has tried to do, I think, is to find a piece of the puzzle that, you know, he could use as an incentive, as an olive branch, to say, look, I'm willing to cut something. It needs to be something that the Republicans feel like would be something that they would want as well. And that's how he settled on the chain CPI, though I think, as Kevin has pointed out, that's not, you know, that doesn't, you know, come anywhere near towards a kind of overhaul of the system. It's more a tweak than anything else.
And if you've just joined us, again, we're talking about President Obama's 2014 proposed fiscal budget, and Michael Scheer is with us from the New York Times. He's White House correspondent, and Kevin Hall from the McClatchy Newspapers, who is national economics correspondent. And we go to another caller. Peter, hi, you're on.
Yes, hi, it's Peter Warfield, and I wish they would stop using the word entitlements, which I think is code essentially regarding programs for poor and lower-income people. Nobody talks about the entitlements of the Coast Guard's yacht-saving, yacht-rescue function, or the courts, which are largely involved with corporate and wealthier people cases, nor roads, which are more used by businesses and folks with cars or people who drive a lot, and which have ancillary expenses like police, courts, and ultimately, in some cases, disability. There's a whole range of benefits that the wealthier folks get and the corporate folks get that nobody calls entitlements, but they are.
All right, Peter, I appreciate that semantic distinction, and thank you for the call. And Beth writes on our website, it really scares me that we are getting to the point where we will have three people paying taxes to support someone who, for whatever reason, doesn't work, with a population that is not replacing itself, plus more workers becoming retirement age. How can we as a country afford to support so many non-workers? And why do we pay such huge welfare payments to big agriculture, big oil, and other big businesses? Something has to give. And I think, Stu, from Redwood City, you're on a similar line here of thinking. Go ahead.
Yeah, here's my question. Is that I'm 48 right now. There's people getting into the workforce who are 20, 25, and 30. What if they just paid the Social Security as a tax and then opted out? Because what the big challenge is that we keep creating future liabilities that no one's even talking about, the $50 trillion we're going to owe in the next 10 or 20 years. What are we looking at the beginning of the system? Everyone's talking about means testing and what happens with the people at the end of the system. But what are we doing to minimize the number of people coming in that are going to become a future liability?
Yeah, good question. Kevin Hall?
Yeah, very interesting question. I think the simplest answer is if you messed with caps, if you played the caps and raised it, let's say, that magical 200, 250,000 number that seems to be the number these days in Washington, you'd solve a lot of the solvency issues. Remember, we're talking, the strain on the system is the 75 million baby boomers born between 1946 and 1964. They'll cycle out of the system. The other strain is longevity, and that obviously they're living longer. So you could do steps now that would affect people, let's say 40, I don't know where the proper cutoff is, but, you know, raise the cap levels, index it to longevity so you don't have someone collecting, you know, full lifetime benefits from 62 to 92. So there are things that can be done. I don't think the worker issue, immigration's a big question here. Do we really think we're going to have a much smaller, less robust economy? Or do we see a world in which we have greater immigration, a greater flow of immigrants, which then are new sources of revenue, too? I think that's one of the big question marks long term.
Yeah, it is indeed. And, Stu, I thank you for the call. And I want to get one more caller on. Bill, that's you. Hi.
Hello. I just this is such a shock to me after listening to Mr. Obama promise there wouldn't be any changes to Social Security in the Democratic.
He made that promise with the 2013 budget, by the way, in fact.
I'm just thinking that the best possible thing the Republicans have, the best weapon they have, is to put Mr. Obama in a room and let him negotiate with himself, because he seems to be able to move in that direction so easily.
Michael Scheer?
Well, and that is actually one of the chief criticisms of what the president has done by, or is about to do on Wednesday, by putting this offer, so to speak, in the budget as essentially the kind of central piece of the budget for 2014, is that he is essentially giving up, or, you know, negotiating away whatever he might have, whatever assets he might have had in that negotiation. He's sort of putting them on the table right away and inviting the Republicans to pull him in their direction even further. When you talk to the administration, they insist that's not what they're doing. They insist, in fact, they even before the budget has been released, they've repeatedly said, look, this is not a starting point. This is a kind of, you know, middle ground that we're putting out there, and the Republicans can either accept it in mass or reject it in mass. But they don't want, what they don't want and what they insist they will not accept is Republicans picking and choosing pieces that they like and then negotiating away.
In many ways, though, as I said earlier, it almost seems like an endpoint. This is the endpoint of this segment, so it's a good segue into thanking both of you gentlemen for being with us. Michael Scheer, again, White House correspondent with the New York Times, and Kevin Hall, national economics correspondent with McClatchy Newspapers. Thank you both for being with us on Forum this morning.
Sure.
And thank you, our listeners. So we're going to break away for a short period, and then we'll be back for another half-hour segment. We're going to talk to Ali Lambert, an award-winning journalist who has a film about Syria that is quite extraordinary. You'll hear about it when we return.